Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Loneliness after traumatic brain injury. Good evening, I'm Terry Smith, your host of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Whether it's morning, noon, or night, if you're listening to an archive podcast or wherever you live on our planet, we'd like to welcome you to another month of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network and let you know that we are with you because we've gotten many calls since last month's show talking about loneliness. So tonight we will cover as much as we can in the 2-hour parameter of our show about loneliness, what causes it, what can maybe cure it, what helps with it, and what we do with it, and what it can lead to. So that's what our discussion is tonight, loneliness after TBI. So stay with us. We'll be right back after we get a word from one of the biggest sponsors of brain injury. That's the Brain Injury Association of America.
If you've experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. For help, call the Brain Injury Association today at 1-800-444-6443, 1-800-444-6443, on the web at BIAUSA.org.
BIAUSA.org. That's an address you should remember if you're new to this world of traumatic brain injury or any type of head trauma or injury. We would like to welcome you to the show, but we'd also like to thank our network owner, Craig Cecilia. He makes sure that all the bills are paid and the network is on air so that our silent epidemic can be heard. We can give it a voice. And Kim Justice, our network manager, handles all the hosts of the show every night of the week. You can find a different topic and episode of the shows on the network. Kim Justice also has a show, Recovery Now. It's on every Wednesday. And like I said, every night of the week there is a show. So tune in nightly for a different episode. And my book, Surviving Head Trauma, I published maybe 30 years after my head trauma. So I give 30 years of wherewithal and how to move about, what to expect and go through. And that can be purchased anywhere books are sold. And my website, terrysmithbooks.com, covers a great deal of what I've written, what I've worked on, and every single show that we've ever recorded on Surviving Head Trauma. So it's an archived network for you to check out on Surviving Head Trauma from at terrysmithbooks.com. And the Facebook page, Surviving Head Trauma, is another place to see us daily. We post something inspirational, motivational, and educational, hopefully, to get you through this new world. But we especially want to thank all of the listeners, all of you out there who tune in with us monthly. And like I said, whether you're listening live, morning, noon, or night, wherever you are on our planet, or to an archived show, we still send the same message. And our co-host, Michelle Lindorf, is, I think, ready to join us. So let's get her on the air. But before we do, let's send a special shout out to Bill. Bill is one of our listeners tonight, and he's a dear, dear friend and a caregiver of someone who is going through quite a bit right now. So we want to thank all of the caregivers out there as well. So thank all of you. And let's get Michelle on the line, our co-host, and get the show rocking with her side of her experience with loneliness tonight. So once she's on the air, we'll say hello. Michelle, hi.
Hello, Terry. I'm here.
You're here.
Can you
welcome.
Hear me?
Another night. I've been
in
the preliminary.
Yes, I'm here. I apologize for being late.
Oh, you're not.
I'm not late. Yeah, I like to be here a little bit early, but I wasn't in place. So how are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I've kind of just shared with our audience the outline for tonight. That's loneliness after brain trauma. And we've thanked
all
of
them. Right. I've been listening. I've been in the green room, so I just
Oh, you could hear. Oh, you can hear. Okay. I didn't realize you were there. All right. So you know you've thanked everyone. So how are you since last month? Anything in your woods?
Oh my goodness, lots of things. I just got back. I returned from a lovely trip to Tahiti.
Remember last month you telling us about that.
I did. Did I tell? See, that's the thing. You tell the same thing over and over. Are
you
sure
called us
I
from
told
Tahiti.
You?
You called us from Tahiti.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I was in Tahiti. Now I'm back. Oh, I miss it so much.
I did the last show. Yeah, this is Brain Trauma Radio. We understand forgetting, even if you're calling from Tahiti.
Yes, I remember. I called, and it was wonderful because the time change was like 4 in the afternoon when I called, so it was beautiful and sunny, and I was lying by the pool with a nice cold drink, and oh, it was just really good. But I'm back into my usual routine, which is very helpful, and catching up with all my friends. So, So that's
well,
we're
it. Glad
you had a good
time.
I don't know what I did.
What?
Yeah, I did one more thing. I was, I went to Ormond Beach and Tomoka Park, I think it's called. There's like a lovely old-fashioned Florida. It's like all these little waterways that lead you up to Flagler Beach. And I was there while my kids were out of town for a week. So that was really that was really good.
Well, good, because we need to get peace in our lives, especially with children and caring for our ill relatives, loved ones, et cetera. We have to get a break and some peace. So it's good to get away and find that tranquility. You certainly sound as if you're never in a position to be bored.
You know, I try to do. I've got a list now. You can call it a bucket list or activity list, but I have a core group of friends that I try to stay current. We try to stay current with each other. We call semi-regularly. So when you talked about loneliness and isolation, I thought, you know, without even having a plan, I'm actually combating the loneliness or isolation by just going down my little list and calling people, meeting people, walking my neighborhood, different things. But sometimes that's not possible, right?
There are times when you're not even mobile to be able to walk down the street or mentally facilitate it to handle that anymore. Because as we've been covering Alzheimer's recently, we know that at some point you're not free to do what you want when you choose. So you're kind of isolated. So not everyone has the ability to go out and intermingle with other people. But
that's a good topic.
Well, I tell you, it's from one of our listeners, and I'm not going to give her last name, but Cameron wrote us and requested that we discuss this because she didn't want to get into a lot of her own personal details, but just could use a conversation like tonight to help her deal with whatever she's going through, and she wouldn't get more specific than loneliness after trauma. And we can only imagine what depths that entails, because we know that trauma itself, depending on the depth of it, can make you automatically lose a lot of your close connections. Your friends tend to eventually fade away after so much time exposed to the trauma. So it just depends on how long it takes or how close the bond was prior to the injury. But it
and
is
something, acceptance, you know?
And what?
I said, and acceptance. Sometimes your people are different after a brain injury. Many times they're unable to do the things they once did, carry on the conversations that they were able to, maybe not even able to do their same employment, all kinds of things, walk, talk. There are many, many come up that affect people in different ways. And sometimes the injured person looks the same. Remember, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
The brain injury is on the inside. And people have this expectation that you're the same.
But you aren't.
Not.
Exactly. So that's a large part of what I mean, I think, when I said that people disappear, they drop off, because you are a different person. And if that new person does not resemble the person they knew, there's an unfamiliarness that isn't comfortable. So people tend to stray away. But let's start with talking about, how do we recognize loneliness? Is it boredom? Because we talked earlier when I said that you don't seem to get bored. That's one of the things that from what I've been studying since Cameron wrote us this letter about loneliness, is that mm-hmm. boredom is often confused with loneliness. So first of all, make sure you're not bored.
God.
Yeah, because sometimes boredom is easily confused. But one of the first major steps to recognizing loneliness and identifying it as an issue is you don't enjoy doing the things you used to do. And we're now referencing Psych2Go. It's a site for psychology and this type of issue. So when you no longer enjoy doing the things you used to do, that can just be one of many symptoms of many things. But when you combine all of these symptoms together, we come up with loneliness. So one is you don't enjoy the things you did, and you're afraid to take chances anymore. You feel the more secure you feel about who you are in your life, you're more open to challenges and new experiences. But when you aren't, it seems a bit all the positive experiences and relationships in your life help, but they buffer the pain. Kind of hide the rejection and the minimize the failure.
But you're talking more,
the fear of failure.
More like a fear? Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, it's the fear. This says the fear of failure and the pain of rejection. So those things, but with trauma, however, it's just the opposite. They become too afraid to take chances on themselves and new opportunities and new relationships because they don't think they have the right emotional resiliency to deal with it should anything ever go wrong. So you lose that desire to take chances. And there are six of them. And the third one is you find it hard to be optimistic anymore. So when you find yourself lonely, you think you're lonely, and then you limit yourself to what you think you can achieve, and the less optimistic you are, you lose hope for the future. So that presses the button down a bit. The
sounds
fourth
like
thing
a,
is
a cycle of despair, you know?
Well, it is. It's not just one of these symptoms or one of these variables. It's the combination of them where we start seeing a pattern to identify a clinical loneliness. And the fourth one is you find it hard to connect with people. And that is a lot of the issue, I think, with brain trauma patients out of the blocks. When they're new, they start out with the difficulty connecting with people. And because it's trust, you're trusting others and you have to open up yourself to invite others in. And it's, if you ever tried helping someone with trauma or who's been through trauma, you know that oftentimes their first instinct is to go into denial and self-isolate, which only makes their loneliness worse.
Right.
So
that is true.
We have two more. The fifth one is you feel misunderstood by everyone.
Okay.
I mean, you can feel at our loneliness in a room full of people who love us even, especially when it feels like no matter how hard the person tries, they can't seem to understand. They just can't get it, their love. They just feel misunderstood by everyone. So that escalates, like you said, into the direction of disaster. And then the last one is when you still allow your trauma to define you. When your trauma defines a lot of your life, yeah. So
seems very difficult.
Well, I mean, because especially how long you are out of your trauma. I mean, if you're new, of course, it's going to consume your every thought because it's your focus. Your whole objective is to get back on track, back on in the saddle, if you will. But the longer you go after your trauma, the less intense it feels. So I think this is more for the initial blast after the trauma and you're just starting to come back into the main flow of life. But we have solutions. There are ways to deal with loneliness and
okay.
things that can, we identify what triggers them. Triggers the loneliness and some of the things like changing a job, school, or living situation, moving away from your support system. And you described yours earlier just now, having a strong support system, friends.
Right.
Alleviates it. But enduring a relationship, the ending of a relationship or friendship can make you feel lonely without having lost anyone else, so that one person in a relationship can sometimes
right.
be overwhelming. And living alone for the first
sometimes
time.
Sometimes it can be freeing.
And sometimes
living alone, yeah.
Well, we know that from your story that well, more, yeah, I can relate to that one too. Being diagnosed
so
with a chronic
one.
Or terminal illness.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that is very difficult. That can be because a lot of times people get defined. They define themselves by their diagnosis and give up. So, I mean, people that have terrible, very poor prognosis where it's, you know, maybe, oh, you're never going to get that, always hear someone who's been given a medical report that's very poor. And we have many examples of people who do not succumb to that advice. They say, okay, this is what they're saying, but while I'm able, I'm going to continue. Or this is what the report shows, and I'm going to make it a job to get back my memory or learn to walk again. And sometimes it can happen, sometimes not. But some people have just that resolve and that fight to not personalize or accept without being too much in denial, but to just overcome obstacles. And I don't know if that's your state of mind or your positive thinking or some kind of a combination of all these things. But
yeah, I think it's a combination and the person, because
right.
each person is different. So I think everyone is going to be a little different in their reaction to their circumstances. So it's
right.
about the individual.
Right.
But living with that terminal illness thing, you can't be defined by that, because I mean that loneliness becomes your last emotion. Because at some point you do leave.
Right. Well, same with your brain injury. If you allow your brain injury, I can't do X because of my brain injury, whatever you fill in the X. So what happened to my brain is not allowing me to go outside, be with my friends, have a conversation, walk, talk, think, whatever it was you were used to doing and you can't, now you're suddenly restricted from doing it, then I'm not saying, oh, everybody think positive, but sometimes we're able to do different things, or there are therapies and things we can do to combat that.
Medication. Yeah.
Right. And routine. You know, we talked about that too before, that a routine of what you do every day can set you up for success. So, like for me, it was doing Sudoku, which is a lonely kind of do-it-yourself thing. But
excellent mind.
I did Sudoku, and that helped.
Excellent mind exercise, though.
Well, right. And I was so angry that I was prescribed, shall we say, Sudoku. I looked okay. I kind of felt all right. I knew something wasn't quite right. But that was something I did on my own, and I got that part of my routine. And so I did the therapy that was recommended and also started back, even though I wasn't quite able to, just reaching out to people. And it was hard at first. But, prognosis, someone telling you some bad news about yourself. It's very hard to keep a positive outlook and not internalize that, or maybe go into a shell or a rage or whatever, something like that.
So, to our listening audience, what you just heard is that it's not abnormal in the beginning to feel that way. So it's a matter of getting through those first days. But let's get our number out to the audience so that we can get some phone calls in and maybe take a few listeners and share their experiences with us. If you're calling the United States, yeah, the area code is 424, and the phone number is 243-9540. Once again, it's 424-243-9540. And if you'd like to speak on air live, press 1 on your phone, and we'll see an emoji go up on the switchboard, which means you'd like to speak. So, with that said, give us a call and let us know your experiences of dealing with loneliness, how you deal with it. Clinically speaking, there are suggestions on how to cope with it. And some of it, after trauma, though, it becomes a little difficult. I mean, because I remember right after mine, the first months after the trauma, I couldn't ride in a car. I couldn't go outside of the house. It was as if it was a crippling effect, as if someone put a drug in my drink or something, and I just would virtually collapse physically, break down at the thought of going outside of the house, or in being involved with other people. The idea of a car was just, it would lead to seizures. I mean, it was uncontrollable. So,
wow.
Yeah. Once we get over those initial days, though, things get better over time. The problems don't necessarily go away. We just get better and more time training and eventually learn to deal with those same feelings. Because even now, when I'm going to visit
your experience.
Yeah, in my experience, even now, when I'm getting in my car to go visit someone specific, it's like a family member or someone I know well, I still get that feeling of just incredible, intense nervousness. And sometimes I have to medicate in order to go somewhere familiar with people I know and love and have known my whole life. So it's something that doesn't go away.
Is it like butterflies?
No, it's more of an anxiety that feels as if I'd feel safer if I didn't leave the house, if I just could stay at home. I wouldn't panic. The safety nest of not leaving never quite left after the head trauma. What happened is that I became medicated and forcing myself to go out. I became it became a habit, and in a way that I would just bite that initial pain and suck it up until I
go
out. And
so going out became your routine.
Well, it became, with the aid of many unhealthy self-medicated aids in the beginning, like alcohol was a big problem in the beginning, because that was like...
You would go out drunk?
Well, not drunk, but certainly with enough alcohol reduce my inhibitions, if you could say so. That's a wrong path to go down, too. So, yeah.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just like imagining. I have this vivid imagination. So I want to ask one question about that. Now, if you can remember, you may not be able to think back to like that kind of time. So it was basically like a irrational, unreasonable, unsubstantiated kind of fear going through your mind that would, you know, you didn't want to do this thing, go outside. And
you
so
sound like
was
a textbook.
That.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I don't mean to. I'm just trying to think of maybe how somebody might feel that they're inside and they're trapped and they know outside is.
Yes.
But what is it? Is it like, I don't want to go out there because something bad will happen? Did you have
feeling
of something, or was just outside?
What you said initially was right on the money. We hit it right on the nail head. An irrational fear. It's an irrational. There's no logic, rhythm, or rhyme. It's just it's a cuckoo thing that happens to the brain when it gets damaged so severely. There's no reason or rhyme for it.
Okay.
And that's when I said you sounded like a textbook. I meant like you wrote the description as a patient would describe it. That's exactly how it feels. I mean, you can't explain it. There's no rational explanation. I mean, it's just something that comes. It's like the sound in your head after you get tinnitus. You hear this loud sound constantly in your life forever, the rest of your life, and in the sound of your heartbeat pounding in your head with this loud siren from tinnitus, and you can't say, medically we can explain it, but it's just there, so we deal with it.
Okay.
Until we find ways to overcome it.
So I was thinking maybe could you talk yourself, or you just had to go, because it wasn't like you were afraid that something would happen, or you had anxiety about someone doing something, or that you would get lost, or, you know, people have these kind of area there. There's a whole range of symptoms and things that could happen with different brain injuries. Everybody's different. Every injury is different. So not everybody's going to feel that severity of agoraphobia or whatever it might be. I guess just going outside. So I just wanted to kind of think that I wanted to ask, was it something specific about outside or just the whole idea of it? And you're saying it was just the whole idea of not being inside.
Well,
and was very scary.
Well, that part is irrational and unjustifiable. But the car part makes logical sense to me, since I was in a big 3-ton truck trauma.
Yeah, it was a vehicle accident.
A vehicular accident, yeah. So you can understand. I can understand. We can all understand not wanting to be in a vehicle. But the other part about being around people or going outside, that was just irrational, illogical, just brain trauma. So once we overcome that, I mean, it doesn't get better. You learn how to cope with it better. That's what you learn.
It's just different.
It's
better coping. Okay, got it. I mean,
better
I got
coping.
Hit by a car too.
So when you were hit, did you have any type of after effects like that?
Yeah, I didn't. I was riding my bike and a car hit me on my way to work, and I was like left in the side of the street. I don't remember how I got to the to the gutter, but I was basically in the gutter. It was really odd because I didn't have a bike anymore because the bike was damaged. But I didn't want to ride the bike. I was okay going outside and walking, getting fresh air. I was okay. And I lived in a little neighborhood where we walked. So I was okay going out. But I couldn't drive. And I was a little bit nervous about riding, but I would do it. And I would not, it took about a year for me to ride a bike. Even on the sidewalk, I just would not, yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I can understand that. But what about the people issue? Did you have issues with being around people or associating with friends and family?
No, I actually had, I had small kids, so they had to get to school and all this. And so it was almost as if a little network mobilized to help me because my injuries were just, all over my body. So my face was messed up and one half of my body was injured and my leg was, just hurting. I had road rash everywhere. I didn't have anything really broken. I think my nose was broken, but I just ached and couldn't do anything. So I had to, and I was a mom, so I couldn't do the lunches. I couldn't do laundry. I couldn't drive or cook or organize anything. I was just like, just alive. I didn't want to eat. And I just kind of sat there and healed and took medicine, all the time. So I was not afraid of the people because the people were coming to me doing things that I couldn't do. But I did have a little anxiety about going in a car, even though I wasn't driving, I was on the bike, and I did eventually start back driving, but that's when I noticed some other stuff was not right. I couldn't remember where I parked and find my car. I had some memory loss. It's funny, I could get where I was going when I finally did start driving 6 months later. I could get around, but I couldn't. It was like a disconnect from like maybe where I parked or why I went to the store or where I was going.
Well, those memory gap lapses, that makes sense. We understand that. What about loneliness? Did that ever become an issue in your recovery process?
No, I think not for me. I mean, I grew up as an only child, really. So I'm very comfortable alone and by myself or being occupied with things. And I was really trying to get my memory back. So I did all these games and trying to facet, and I was going to doctor visits like 5 times a week. So I had a very busy kind of schedule for a while. It tapered off after about 3 to 6 months. I can't really remember, but I do remember I was quite busy. So I didn't have that fear of people or fear of going out because I had to go out. I had a lot of scarring on my face, which I got sorted out. I had to reuse my hands again. And then I did a lot of biofeedback and brain things to get my memory back.
Okay.
And none of it was by myself. It was all under professional care. So I didn't Google anything. I just had a nice team of doctors and family members that did all of the stuff I used to do.
Well, that's an interesting take because it's another example, of just how many different results can happen after trauma, because I was such an extrovert prior to my brain trauma. I was an outgoing athlete, academic scholar. I was college ROTC with my focus becoming a Marine Corps officer. And
right.
After that, after being such an outgoing, I was given the military's department, the Medal of Superior Cadet when I was in ROTC, my freshman year of college. So I was an extremely outgoing yeah, outgoing person. But after that, I, you know, being around people became, and still is, difficult. It's I have a hard time meeting new people, accepting new people into my life. And you would think that would be one of the steps towards loneliness, which is our topic tonight, dealing with loneliness after TBI. But I found that I cherish being alone. Being alone is my comfort zone. It's going out with other people that makes
place.
It's my safe place. Being alone, yeah. To me, when remember in 2020 when COVID came and everyone had to isolate.
Okay. You were in your element. I don't have to go out.
Yeah, except for the people who died, and may they all rest in peace from that experience. But I was in a secret heaven. I mean, nobody could go out, so everyone had to stay at home. I thought it was so.
Social
there are those of us.
Thing.
Yeah, there were those of us who would like to be socially distanced at all times, and I have that issue to this day. It's just 39 years. July 20th was 39 years since the head trauma. July 20th, just 7 days ago.
So we've been friends 30 something years.
Yes, ma'am.
Because
I
met you afterwards.
You met me just after.
It must
a
be
couple
35.
It was maybe, let's see, four or 5 years after the accident, because I just started back
when we became
to college.
Friends. Yeah, it was in college. Yeah, like
and I
Virginia.
Didn't go back.
Yeah.
So I was out of school for 3 years after the accident, recovering. So I didn't go back to college until.
Okay.
Yeah. So you and I met maybe 4 or 5 years after the accident, and. And again, I was
okay,
my sister,
and I had
someone familiar. I would ever go out with someone extremely close to me because I could not alone, even that far after the accident. And I met you with my sister. She was someone I felt
right. I think I was
close
friends
enough.
With. Yeah. Oh, so mm-hmm. she we were friends, and then you were just there. So we were.
You're right.
Okay, got it. That kind of makes sense. Okay. I remember, it was in Atlanta or something.
It was,
anyway,
never
mind.
We were both visiting. We were both visiting in Atlanta. But again, it was about 5 years after the accident, and I had gone through quite a bit to reach that level of going out. But even now, it's the same. So I guess there's someone like you did not get affected by the isolation bug. Some of us do. I was. So there's everybody, I guess, in the middle somewhere. But there are eight ways, according to Ombre Associates, on how to cope with loneliness. I'm going to share it with you. And it says, enduring trauma doesn't mean you're destined to live with loneliness. Especially, you know, now I'm saying just in general, depending upon your level of severity, because you described a severe injury, but ended up just as fine as you were prior to the injury. After a while, you're socializing with your friends and hanging out and going out in public. So that part is true. It doesn't mean you're destined to live a life of loneliness. And these strategies can help you cope with and ward off feelings of loneliness. So the first one is to identify and validate it. Denial and shame only perpetuate the problem. I guess that means if you're lonely, identify if you feel lonely. And the second one is to take stock of the connections you already have. Think about all the people that you care about and that and they care about you, it can be easy to forget just how wide your circle actually extends, especially if you're in a negative emotional spiral. So if you're headed downward mentally, try to, if not even reaching out to the people to connect with them, think of them. Because when you put them in your mind, you can bring them to life in your, like you said earlier, imagination even. And that gives you some sense of connection.
Well, yeah, you can. I, without knowing these steps, I was required to do that. You know, I didn't have anyone to do the things that I could do. And it wasn't just I don't like somebody the way they do it, or I didn't like what the neighbor brought for dinner or whatever. It wasn't that at all. It was more like I was kind of juggling quite a few plates. And when I went, let's just say, was taken out of the equation, the kids, my children, were young, and they still needed breakfast, lunch, dinner, school clothes, laundry. You know, they weren't anywhere near independent. They were like, I don't know. Jeez.
Quite dependent, in fact.
Second grade. Yeah, second grade or something, you know, maybe kindergarten. So they were pretty young, maybe third grade at the most. But so there was a lot to do. So I did have a very close neighborhood connection. This was in Denver. And so I had some relatives nearby, and then other relatives came to live with me and do these things. So I had a cousin that lived there for a while. My mom came to live for a while. I had people cooking and coming in and driving. You know, I had someone to take the kids and help with their homework or whatever. So, you know, I was married at the time, but there was a lot, you know.
You had a different dimension. You're right.
Yeah.
You had a family and small children to care for when you were going through this. So it wasn't just you recovering on your own. You had a family to deal with it as well. Mm-hmm. So that adds a new element
right.
to this entire equation about loneliness. You can't be lonely
right.
when you have that many people.
Right. And so that kind of maybe not have the isolated feeling, but the other thing that I think about people, maybe they're the breadwinner and they're injured. Maybe that's the family. Maybe they're by themselves. And, you know, I had a friend who had a bike accident right in front of his house. Like a car hit him on his motorcycle, and he was really not well. But he lived alone. So I think his mom lived maybe a mile or two away, but he was living alone. So that's kind of hard. You know, you've got a broken arm maybe and collarbone, and you're on all this medicine, and you've got to do your own breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and, you know, things like that, just normal day-to-day living and cleaning and taking care of yourself when you're by yourself on top of your finances. It's really quite a daunting task. Even for someone, you know, that maybe had a minor setback. So a concussion, that's a brain injury.
Yeah, and like you said, it depends on the person.
Yeah, but so it can be devastating on top of financially being financially difficult. And physically difficult, and mentally you're stressed. It's a recipe for disaster if you don't, maybe like your number two. Is it your second one that said reach out and identify your circle of people? And
who
you
care
can
about
just
you?
Say, hey, yeah, who care about you and you care about them. And if you make that phone call and reach out and say, hey, this happened, I had an accident, and would it be okay? Can you call me on Fridays at noon, or can I call you once in a while just to check in, you know, just to talk about nothing, or just, you know, just to talk? And some people will be like, oh, that's odd, or I haven't heard from you in a long time, or whatever, but, you know, some people are very generous.
And some people don't feel loneliness because they're alone. I mean, I've talked with so many people who prefer actually not dealing with other people at all. In fact, they'd rather not answer the phone than have to talk with someone. There are people who really, and it's nothing personal against other people. It's just that they are so into their own cocoon, if you will, their own comfort zone, they don't want to come out. So that becomes a gray area of, is it loneliness if you want to be in that situation? Or is it a matter of
loneliness if you remember what you said in the beginning, that first statement? It's like your awareness that you're alone. It's aware. It's a feeling. It sounds very subjective. So you can be alone and lonely in a room full of people.
This is true.
So it's a perception. It's very subjective, I think.
In fact, to mention what you just said, Michelle, is so true that I tend to, I like being alone. I do like having my alone time, and I don't feel lonely when I'm alone. The time when I feel lonely the most is whenever I'm with other people who I'm not feeling, like I'm feeling outside of that group. That's when I feel lonely, when I'm with other people and not connected to them, but just kind of there. Then I'll feel lonely.
Kind of like physically there, but isolated by maybe your beliefs or your thoughts or your political whatever position, something like that.
Or mental disability or mental disorder. Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
Do you have any rational explanation for that one?
I don't have any rational explanation for that one. I'm just trying to work it all out, you know. It seems like if you are feeling or believing that you are different, a person can self-isolate. You can find enough. We're all different. But if you really want to be an outsider, you can make yourself or decide that you are outside.
Like a self-fulfilling prophecy? Like self-fulfilling prophecy?
I think, I think like if you're with a group or like say you have a group of people over or a party and they've all been to Spain or Italy and they're talking about the wine or something that you haven't done, an experience that they have together, you can feel outside. Now, they're not actually excluding you. You're not banned from going to Italy. You're not banned or excluded from talking about your experience with Italian things. But at that moment, while this group is talking about something or sharing an experience, you can feel outside. A person who hasn't done that or hasn't been there, or in our case, hasn't had the brain injury, maybe a person could begin to think that they're different because of this event that happened and kind of draw back into their own shell or selves and isolate themselves in a group or around people. So the people are there and they don't even realize this dynamic is going on. It's just a social gathering or a meeting or whatever it is. But as a person with a brain injury, sometimes the mind can do things and it happens all the time. You've seen, what's it called? The little, like people tell a secret and they whisper something. And by the time it gets to the 10th person, it's a completely different sentence.
Oh yeah, so like in school we played the neighbor, you tell the story when by the time it reaches the other side of the classroom it's a whole different story.
Right. So there are things that happen that we need to maybe look from a different perspective. We're on one side and we think, oh, this is happening, but it could just possibly be our perception of something happening.
Sort of like I was saying earlier,
irrational.
A lot of times it's irrational fear or irrational paranoia that really has no source. It's just an imaginary policeman in your brain telling you to sit and giving you orders. But what you're saying also kind of leads us into the third suggestion, rather, to cope with loneliness, and that was to realize that you aren't alone in feeling lonely. Loneliness is more common struggle and affecting more people than you might realize. Sometimes knowing that
Sorry, I didn't hear you. I apologize. What did you say?
Sometimes just knowing that knowing that in itself can help. Knowing that you're not alone in your loneliness. That many people are affected by loneliness. So just knowing
that's similar to what I was saying. Yeah, that's similar to what I was saying.
Exactly.
It's your perspective. So it's kind of like the glass half full, the glass half empty. I'm on this side, and I see the world a particular way, and I'm going to make a decision based on that, and I don't have the ability, or maybe I'm so sure I'm right, I'm not going to consider other options. And is that the third choice? That's your third step?
Well, the third step was actually realizing that you're not alone in loneliness, that they're a lot more common struggle than you think.
Right.
So
realizing that there's another side of the coin that you can't see, that, other people actually are doing this. A person may feel that they're the only one going through this because in your circle of friends or people that you know, you're the only one. And they can't possibly be feeling this because they haven't been through what you've been through. But of course, there's different reasons for loneliness.
Exactly. And it reminds me of a post that we had on Facebook, Surviving a Trauma page, the other day. And it was something about the people feeling more comfortable when me too, when they hear that. I can relate to that. And it's not that misery loves company. It's just that we like to know that we're not alone going through the same thing.
Right. And it's not really commiserating, but it's like, tell me, it's like finding a commonality, finding a talking point or something that you may be interested in. Me too. That happened to me. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Or tips, coping skills you share with each other. Sharing so we can go to number four. Number four. Slow down. Use your alone time to connect with yourself, whatever that means to you. Journal, take a walk, light a candle, sip a cup of tea, meditate. So this one sounds as if you're going too fast and lonely in life and you need to slow down and meditate. I'm not quite sure that I get this one. Did you follow that one?
Say it again.
Slow down, use your alone time to connect with yourself, whatever that means to you. Journal, take a walk, light a candle, sip a cup of tea, or meditate. So I guess maybe
that
embrace your loneliness.
Kind of like
and just
self-actualization. Well, I'm saying self-actualization. I'm thinking it's more along the lines of turning inward and seeing taking care of yourself. Sounds like a little bit more self-care. And people feel guilty, especially moms. I've got to do this and that and the other thing. And they neglect themselves. So I'm thinking maybe slow down and smell the roses. Slow down and have a cup of tea. Slow down. Stop running all over trying to manage everything and only manage yourself, which really is about all you can manage. But that's what it means to me. That's what number four means to me.
And
giving
also, it
sounds like healthy to yourself.
Use your alone time to connect with yourself. So maybe it's thing embrace it. Don't look at it as I'm lonely, woe is me, but this is my time to spend with myself and my thoughts, and reach clarity of some kind, maybe. So
and maybe also get prepared to meet people. So maybe it is getting your laundry done, or for going to get a haircut, or shaving. You know, like a man, you may shave or do some grooming to yourself that makes you feel a particular way. You know, maybe a clean shave might make you see yourself better. Maybe you're not able to work, but you could still get dressed. Things like that, you know, things that make you feel good about yourself. Soaking your feet. Women can do their nails or have a hairstyle change or put something on that's pretty. Or, I mean, yeah, I think that's more self-care.
Well, it's funny that you should say all those things, because everything you just said leads up to number five. Everything you said is if you are reading this, because the next step, number five, get out every day. Have some sort of face-to-face interaction with someone, even if it's a stranger. Research shows that even weak bonds strengthen your immunity and overall well-being. So everything he just said, get up, groom yourself, go out. That's exactly what it's saying. Force yourself to get out there and just
bite
the bullet.
Even if it's going to the mailbox, you know, you could be just going to the mailbox and someone's there checking their mail and you speak to them. So often we walk right by and everybody's on their phone or looking down. And like you said, the social distancing thing, we kind of become accustomed to being a bit more distant. So, that's amazing. Now, you have the list. I am not reading the list. I'm not looking over your shoulder. So.
No, you're right on the money, though. But I tell you, what you said, just going out in this, what this thing, too, just said, is what I've found myself doing of years late, now that I have gotten over the agoraphobia so bunch. And if I go like a short grocery list to go to the grocery store to pick up something or to the hardware store or whatever, that's my time to I'm focused. So I have a list in my phone. So I'm looking at my phone going for each item, but at the same time, I'm having the biggest joy of being around people without actually interacting with them. I'm not there with them. I'm not interacting with them, but I get to see them. I get to see them talk. I get to observe them, hear them, see them. And to me, that's fulfilling enough to not have to interact. In fact, it's easier for me to go out and do something like that than actually go to someone's personal space, someone's house or someone's, to meet someone in person. That's a lot more difficult than just wandering around the store looking for items.
Strange.
Yes.
Well, you must check yourself out, because the cashiers are quite chatty nowadays. And they tell them, make conversation with the people. So the people that are cashiers and checking out and helping you reach the things on the top shelf, those people are trained to speak and carry on little conversations within the 30 seconds that they have. Oh, did you find everything today? So they ask you, how was your shopping experience? Certain open and closed-ended questions. And they invite you back. We'll see you the next time. So they're already kind of geared up, some of them. Take advantage of their ability to just chit-chat with the person. So unless you're checking yourself out.
Which is the popular thing now. It's just less human interaction.
Yeah, they don't have to hire anybody.
And... It's you're right. I mean, there are opportunities out there if you are at the stage of recovery where you can actually take advantage of those opportunities. Even 39 years post-trauma for me, I find myself yes and no responses of the checkout person. They'll ask questions and simple yes or no question.
Oh.
Yes or no, get out. You know, I don't want to engage too much, just enough to take care of this transaction and be on my merry way. I've had fun looking at all the people, listening to them talk, but it's time to get my isolated yeah. little head trauma butt to the car.
You're that creepy old guy sitting on a bench watching everybody. Is that you?
The crazy old man in the corner house. Oh, no, don't go down there.
Yes, creepy guy on the corner. He's kind of being, looking out the window and stuff. He won't come out except to cut his grass, but we know he's there because I can see the curtains moving.
This sounds
you know,
like a horror movie, doesn't
there.
It? Isn't that the plot of a lot of horror movies? We know there's someone
know.
In that house.
I don't know. I don't
All right,
know.
Well, let's go to number six. You do what?
Okay, six.
I
do believe that getting out and meeting people and a little bit of conversation, no matter how trivial it is, like they said, a loose network or a casual conversation is that encounter will go a long way in strengthening your ability to do more and have more conversations and better conversations and deeper, more meaningful relationships. They've got to start. So if you're by yourself and not going out, you will eventually maybe get lonely. Possibly you'll get lonely. But
I say what you don't use, you lose.
Yeah, depends on what comes out. Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're doing what
yeah,
you
I
just
mean,
said to the same store.
Offered. Right.
Those people are what? What did you
they
say?
They start knowing if you go and buy one day of, if you buy one day of groceries and go back every day, they start knowing you. You know.
That's what I wanted to say. If you did this shopping that we talked about, just shopping to be out or amongst people, if you go to the same place, you tend to recognize the cashiers, the workers in the stores, and those people, even though they don't know it, become a part of your life. You become familiar with them, and even though you don't interact or speak with them that often, you know, you recognize them, they recognize you. So that's one way of dealing with the loneliness that I think might benefit those who are able to leave their house, who've gotten beyond the agoraphobia so much. Number seven, or do we say, no, number six is where we are. Number six. Join something.
Yeah,
join something. Encourage yourself to join a meetup, a group, club, or where you can actually interact with other people. You never know where you'll make a meaningful connection. Now that's pretty advanced to actually go out and engage in a community. That's a big step. But if you're at that level, that's what you do.
It could be as minor as going to the gym, going to a gym membership. I know. There was I heard a story where the guy wanted to lose some weight, and he joined the gym, and he said, I'm going to go to the gym, but I'm not going to work out. So he just went there to get used to it, and it became part of his routine. And finally he said, well, I'll get on one machine, but I'll just do it for 5 minutes. And after a while, he continued, and he worked his way up to a full workout over however long. And in no time or a bit of time, he lost and toned up or did whatever his goal was. He met it. Started with zero working out, just physically going to that place.
The same
going.
Repeatedly going to the same place.
Maybe the same time, maybe not. But he got used to going, and then he met some people that were looking for him. Maybe he sat on the side and had a cup of coffee and watched them come and go. And maybe somebody invited him, said, hey, you want to walk with me on the treadmill, or we need one more person for basketball, whatever it is. But however, he started with just showing up, scanning his card, his membership card. So it's possible. Therefore, it's possible. I don't want to kind of dilute my words. It is possible to overcome our fears by the repeated exposure or to have a positive outcome. And maybe it might be negative. Sometimes you may feel, oh, I'm having a panic attack. I got to go home. So, hey, it's possible.
It just takes time sometimes. Like, you may not be ready for it. Maybe it's a little too soon. If that's the case, you have to leave. I mean, I can tell a story.
Right.
I remember when I did go back to college after my head injury, there was a cookout at the department, the media department house at the end of the school year.
Okay.
And the first year, my sophomore year, I went and I drove and I saw the cars, but I didn't have, but I didn't. I just saw them. I looked at the people there. I looked at the cars in the street, and I drove, made a U-turn and went home. The second year, my junior, you physically went
to the party.
I just didn't get
you
out of my car or
drove
stop.
There, but you didn't get out.
I panicked. It was too much to handle. The second year, a year later now, the end of the year, I get to the party and I go early this time, and I get out, and I've known the chairman of the department for a while, so I help him kind of set things up. But when students and other faculty start coming, I leave. I got out of my car and left because
but
it was a bit much
for a minute. Okay,
for just when the first person showed up, I left. The third year, my senior year, I made it to the party so much early that I helped set up. And this time I waited until, students arrived and students started talking, but the minute they wanted to interact, I left. So I never made it through a whole party, but each year I've got progressively better at making my presence in a place
go ahead.
Timing.
Okay. Well, that's kind of like the second and fourth things that you said, having a routine, and then that self-actualization, realizing that, okay, I'm alone, or okay, I'm not feeling comfortable, and it's okay giving yourself permission to go away from a situation that's making you feel uncomfortable before the attack happens or before the anxiety overtakes you. So it's okay. Those are the first couple of steps that we spoke of, that make a routine, go out every day, and don't beat yourself up about it. I think that's what number four is. Be aware of how you feel and stop and analyze how you're feeling and where you are. I'm starting to get butterflies in my stomach. I've only got to the front door. Maybe I shouldn't go in. And listen to that little intuition. If you don't feel comfortable, maybe not jump. I mean, we grow where we're uncomfortable. So we learn to do new things, but it may be too soon. Maybe it's too much. So being able to recognize when you're there in the moment, or predicting, anticipating the
but not projecting, because if we project too much, we'll become self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, so we have to be as strong as we can and put forth every power that we have to sometimes make that initial transition from agoraphobia to going out in public.
A social event.
A social event.
Did I say projecting? I don't know what I meant. But accept where you are and give yourself permission to address how you're feeling without being guilty. And your feelings are valid. Some people say, feelings aren't real, but they are. If you're having a feeling or an opinion, it's valid. It may be just only valid to you, but it's feelings are valid, I think.
Of course they are, especially if it's telling you that you're uncomfortable and that you're because depending upon the level of your trauma, it can escalate into an uncomfortable scene. In the beginning, I had the determination more so than my neurons could handle. In fact, a lot of my early seizures were because of my determination to get over the agoraphobia, and I would go out and find myself in a worse situation because I'd seize in public and be taken away by an ambulance, which didn't help getting over agoraphobia. So you kind of, like you said, follow what feels right for you at that time. Until
right.
it becomes debilitating, and you have to have some intervening person help you, because if you don't, you really can become just a recluse and locked away from life itself. So you got to find that middle ground. But let's give our audience the number again, because I'd like to see if we have any listeners who would like to comment. Our country code is 1. Our area code is 424-243-9540. And once you're in queue,
right.
if you'd like to speak online, press 1. So I want to get to number 7, and that is limit your use of social media. Don't let it replace human interaction. Instead of texting, pick up the phone and have a conversation. Better yet, make plans to meet up with an old or new friend. Oh, that one has
right.
a lot of things written into it, especially with today's society. In fact, today's generation is growing up with social media, so that's going to be a hard one for, are they going to be able to interact with each other without these devices? Now, give them a head trauma on top of it.
Well, even now, I text my son upstairs. I'll talk to my mom, and she'll say, oh, is your son bringing my dinner? And I'll say, oh, let's text him. And he's one floor away. He's in his bedroom, and I'm in the basement, and he's upstairs or whatever. So I think that we are a written, everyone is pretty much literate. People, I'm not saying that our grammar is perfect or whatever, but more people are reading and writing things. Educated people, we tend to take notes. And as far as coping mechanisms for the brain injury, you have to, a list may be imperative. You may get to the fridge, even people without brain injuries, go to the fridge and forget why they came to the fridge. They can't remember, why did I come to this store? Where am I going?
The older we get.
Have you ever, right.
Yeah.
Have you ever
yeah.
driven home and you kind of space out and you make it, but you're like, oh, I'm home already, or I'm here already. And it's like, where was I the whole 20 minutes? And you're maybe lost in something or unaware. So yeah. So that's I think that's very, very important. Very important.
Well,
I wanted to hear your take on.
Well, I don't, there's such a pro and con with social media, but it limiting your use of it is good if you're trying to get back out there. But I mean, it's so useful for, like you said, taking notes. I find that my phone has become my replacement for, I guess, for our audience who is old enough to know about the day timer. You remember day timers? We'd carry them around. They were calendars that were.
Oh, you mean the calendar notebook. I never had one.
I never managed
to do that. I took copious notes on a calendar. I always had a calendar, and then the cell phones came out with the calendars, and you kind of did that. I didn't have the brain injury in university, so
I tell you, that day timer was the Bible. I called it the Bible because my life was in it. And now that big, bulky thing is in the size of a little phone that you put in your pocket. And every note and the calendar section is my go-to. Everything I do, just go in there and put it in the calendar, and it keeps life flowing smoothly and on schedule and punctual.
Okay.
But if you don't have it says limit your use of social media, would there be any outside interaction really? Because I find myself texting more than talking. It seems easier sometimes. I don't know. But this is saying to get out of that habit, to replace the keypad on your phone with a human being in your ear.
Mm.
So let's work on that.
I think that's valid. That's a valid subject. What we see and what we post and what we read right now is easily manipulated. People
especially with the onslaught of AI.
Right. I was just thinking that people are going to the selfie museum to take the perfect picture of themselves with the background, and people are going on little vacations, or they're using downloads of other things to appear that they are doing things not doing, or being somewhere they're not being. I'm not a fan of the I post things, but as far as posting everything and right at the moment and comparing yourself to others, you can get very, it can go sideways really quickly.
You know what? I look at really this as a dangerous possibility for the future, our future generations, because these children are growing up where likes and clicks count more than their own self-esteem, because that's how they get their self-esteem, the number of likes on a post and all the social media.
Or like you said, views and likes and
views, exactly.
Stars and hearts and all of these meaningless things.
While they're born into this generation, that's all they know as reality. So it's concerning to me, because if this is telling us to get away from social media to beat the lonely monster, what are these children going to do when it's all they've ever known? So that's one that we'll deal with in future generations. But the last one they suggest is number 8, and it is to finally seek professional help, especially if you've experienced trauma. If you have difficulty connecting with people, it might take more than leaving your comfort zone or engaging in social skills training. A trained psychotherapist can help your process and heal from your childhood trauma, paving the way to healthy, fulfilling relationships in adulthood. So at last stroke, seek professional help. Like Dr. Pam Robbins from last month, I'm looking at notes here where she wants to get as many people who can give her funny stories about dealing with patients of dementia and Alzheimer's. We find something funny, we can maybe make sense of this, or make light of, because there's nothing light about it, but at least make it livable. And when we work on our social skills, think about the professional advice and take from it what you need and abandon the rest, but you can grow. In fact, speaking of Dr. Robbins, Pam Robbins, we're still waiting for you to send us funny situations that you might have from your experiences in dealing with trauma patients or dementia patients or Alzheimer's patients. Just as a side, that was a side note to remind you, as our listening audience, to send us what you have. And we'd like to get that on to Dr. Robin. She was a big help last month. So, in fact, she's the type of person, when it says seek professional help, a person who deals with the brain and the trauma and the areas of our show here, we find that we get something from every experience if we look hard enough. And we're not going to gain something from every interaction with every clinician, but there's always something if we go into it with an open mind and listen. So that's a good, I think number 6 is a good step to take when we've exhausted all their possibilities. Medication. Now that's your area of expertise as a pharmacist.
Right.
Think of medicines that help control issues of loneliness and depression, like antidepressant, depressive medicines. Hello? Michelle, did we lose you?
Yes. Oh, hello. Sorry about that. I lost you for a second. What did you say?
I asked if you thought of the pharmaceutical approach to dealing with loneliness and depression and after brain trauma. Is that something you recommend or as a pharmacist, or is that something that we want to avoid?
Well, there again, you're dealing with individual injuries and perceptions and very subjective area that may not fully be addressed by there may not be a pharmaceutical remedy to make you bounce back. It may just be something that takes the edge off the anxiety or allows you to have a normal speed mind instead of racing or anxiety. So there are different aspects of different drugs available, different medications, different therapies, like they mentioned in the fourth one, biofeedback, relaxation techniques, slowing down, and just being more intentional will go a long way and may
biofeedback.
Help.
Wait, let me slow you down for a second. Explain biofeedback a little bit more. What does that involve?
Well, it's like electromagnetic type of, maybe like controlling your brain and meditating. It's kind of along those lines, but being quiet and concentrating on something other than something outside of yourself or something inside, focusing on a book or a cloud or a feeling that you're having. Now, biofeedback is one of the, it's like a medical type of thing. People can look it up.
So we just Google biofeedback for trauma care?
Right. Yes. And so it's more like brain training. As I would say biofeedback is. However, there are many different therapies, many different injuries. Pharmaceutical remedies are a piece of the puzzle. We mentioned 8 different things, 8 different ways that you can address your loneliness if that's where you are. And there's not a panacea. There's not a one-stop shop. So I do think that medication and vitamins and healthy living have a part in combating loneliness. And just for some people like you, seeing other people and eavesdropping or watching their movements is enough interaction. Others need to have a full conversation or speak with the people regularly, have something more than just a passing greeting. So there are just different ways to go about it, and I think that there is a place for some people for a pharmaceutical remedy, a tablet or something, liquid or...
So you don't think there's a danger?
Vitamin.
We said every commercial we see about drugs, there's always a list longer than the benefit, a list of side effects, rather, that are potentially more dangerous than the actual illness we're medicating. So should we be concerned about those types of side effects, or are those side effects just listed because of legal requirements, but they're really not that prevalent?
It's a little bit of both in the package insert or when you speak with your doctor or pharmacist, medical health professional, you can ask what exactly are the side effects of this medicine, how common are they? Those questions and similar questions of that nature are readily available with each medicine in the package insert. Pharmacies generally will print out a kind of less medical synopsis of what's going on and what to expect. So those are questions you may want to ask your health caregiver and find out what's actually potentially could happen and the percentage or the risk of it happening. So it might be, let's say, you'll be sleepy if you take this anti-anxiety product. Well, and the next logical question may be, how common is that? What percentage of people experience drowsiness? How severe do you think it is? Would my dose increase the likelihood of me having a side effect? And how is it going to, how do you think it would affect my ability to do whatever it is I'm trying to do or my regular day-to-day life? Just certain questions you may want to think about when you're, not just for brain injury, but when you're receiving any medicine. It's a good idea to ask questions and find out what to expect, where your dose falls on the spectrum. Is it a low dose, or am I in the middle, or is it something higher? Because generally, the higher dose you're ingesting, the more likely you are to have some type of maybe side effect. Also, it could be worsened if you're taking multiple things.
So oftentimes our mixtures of medications can create additional problems. It's the mixture.
Right,
and
if you're having a cocktail. You're having a cocktail of different things.
Yeah.
I'll call it a cocktail. Because with a cocktail, you're mixing maybe two or three ingredients. So if you're having a medication cocktail, a sleepy medicine, a wake-up medicine, an anxiety medicine, an itching medicine, that you're maybe taking all these things orally, plus vitamin supplements and different things.
A seizure medicine,
something for dry eye, something for blood pressure, something for your thyroid. There's so many different systems in our body, just multiple things all working together for a common good, so to speak. We are a walking bag of chemicals, basically. And when you introduce these other chemicals, nutraceuticals, pharmaceuticals, vitamins, and foods even, you are introducing and mixing and potentially causing something else to go on or the side effects to be heightened, the sleepiness to be more than expected, the weight gain to be more than expected. Well, whatever. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but I think that what we want to do is whatever it takes without danger to avoid the direction that loneliness and depression can lead us. And that's what's in the research that I did today. Alcoholism, addiction, and substance abuse is the next step for loneliness. People with a lack of social support and perceptions of loneliness can contribute to their development and their maintenance of substance misuse. So loneliness doesn't always help recovery. It with high levels of loneliness, it can be a contributor to addiction. And
addictions
can lead to suicidal thoughts. So it gets darker. We've only touched the surface, but it does get much darker. And loneliness and social isolation is a well-documented risk factor to suicidal intentions, gestures, and sometimes completed suicides. So loneliness typically peaks in the same seasons that suicidal gestures and suicide peak, winters and spring. And they attribute that to feelings of loneliness or burdensome on other emotional experiences, rather, to take a toll on someone who's suicidal, and that because they just feel they wouldn't be missed by those around them. They feel that no one's going to miss them at the Christmas season or whichever the peaks of the winter and spring. So they take themselves out. And in fact, I have a suicide prevention hotline number here for you right now, and it's 1-800-273-8255. But there are so many now. There's a new number, 3-digit hotline, and I don't want to give out the wrong number, but I'll Google it here before we say goodnight. But there's so many dark answers to that. What do we do with loneliness? If we don't get the right answers, it can lead to some dark endings. And lastly, the feelings of loneliness can contribute to daytime dysfunction, like lethargy, fatigue, low motivation, and all of that, which can turn into overall poor sleep quality. And we know what poor sleep quality can lead to.
Right.
It's all breaking down our immune system, our resilience to all kinds of problems. So I guess that outweighs the risk factors if we want to avoid the darker sides that loneliness can lead us down. Mm-hmm. But it's what we have to do. We do what it takes. So with that in mind, we want to hear from an organization near you in our listening audience that specializes in helping you, especially when you're new to this community, is when it's all, everything we're talking about now may seem logical, but or if you've been in this brain injury style lifestyle for a while, it makes sense. But when you're new, a lot of it doesn't yet. So the Brain Injury Association of America is a national organization that helps not only with us personally and as far as guiding us in the right direction in our community, but they do a lot of work on Capitol Hill to get bills and rights for trauma patients.
Research, treatment, and support speed recovery for the more than 2.5 million children and adults who sustain traumatic brain injuries in the United States each year. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Support research and better access to care, and let people with brain injuries know that they are not alone. Call 1-800-444-6443 or visit www.biausa.org to learn more about brain injury.
biausa.org. Check them out.
Right.
Because wherever you are, they have a group near you or can guide you to the right direction for assistance of whatever your needs are. After trauma, because it can be quite, like you said, daunting. It's a daunting event to deal with. I mean, the task is lifelong, and most people who meet us don't understand what we go through. And it's like you said, different for each one of us. Some more severe than others. Some of us are in wheelchairs and can't speak, and have to be fed by someone else. Some are in a bed and don't know they're alive. Others of us are working as pharmacists and doing the best we can to write books and plays and movies.
But
so there's a list of us.
Pick up the pieces after.
Exactly.
Pick up the pieces after. And trying to put as many pieces of the puzzle back in place, the ones that don't fit right now. And that's the best we can do. We can't beat ourselves up. And just as long as we're making some little bit of progress every day, in the end, we will have made some attempts and hopefully made progress. towards a healthy and happy recovery. It's possible.
It is, and it takes perseverance and hard work. I mean, the work you put in mostly will be on your own, because you aren't going to be around therapists and doctors constantly. You're going to have a lot of alone time. So to fight that lonely monster, you occupy yourself with visualizing where you want to go, what you want to do with mm-hmm. your new life, your post-trauma life, and hold
right.
on to that and use it as your motivation, your fuel, your life depends on it, because at some point you have to make a decision. You're going to either let it swallow you, or you're going to make every stride possible to continue living a happy life. And that's ultimately, I think, what life is about, finding a place of joy in this world. It's so convoluted with good and bad and evil and good and good and curiosity and just so many different directions in this world to take. Finding peace, I think, and happiness is the most rewarding after hard lived life.
Peace and freedom.
Freedom.
Peace
freedom
and
peace.
Freedom. Those are the top. Freedom is not free. You must pay for it. Some people paid for freedom with their lives. Others paid in other ways. Freedom, however, is a great starting place, however you get to it. And we can move on to whatever else, but peace and freedom are two things that in my old age, in this point in my life, I really appreciate my time and my peace. And I'm really glad that I have the freedom to do what I want in most cases. My constraints are mainly financial or time. But ability doesn't stop me.
Well, Michelle, as you know, for the last few months, we've been talking about Alzheimer's mm-hmm. because of someone I know and love dearly is going through it. And I've added now to that list you just gave us about finding peace and tranquility. Oh. It all means nothing without your mind. You don't quite realize where you are anymore. You might even end up locked behind a gate if we don't take care of our minds. And there's really no way to defend against it if it's going to happen. So we have to have gratitude for every waking moment that we're lucid, that we're aware of our loneliness, that we can talk about it to some other people, and that we know who we are, where we are, and what reality is. So when I hear you talk about planning for a healthy life and a happy life and a well-adjusted life, mm-hmm. I also have to add to that now, from this new experience of dealing with an Alzheimer's patient personally, I mm-hmm. have to add, having a sound mind is at the top of that list, because you can acquire the world and not know it if you don't have a sound mind. So we have to keep our minds alert somehow, and gratitude for every moment that we are able to function, and this reality of going through this with Alzheimer's just makes me even more aware of the preciousness of life. And it makes loneliness
right.
seem so almost minuscule by comparison, and it makes you, I think, even more grateful for people, good people
mm-hmm.
in the world, like the caregivers for the Alzheimer's and dementia patients. So I think it all boils down to us is us finding the joy that we can, and holding on to it for as long as we can mentally, and then And then try to help others the best we can. So there's no one route, like you said, one person or one type of injury for one type of person. Every type of person is going to have a different type of effect from the same injury even. So we can at least just keep going over the tips for avoiding loneliness so that it doesn't lead us down the dark path, but at the same time remain grateful that we are on a path, that we know where our path is, as opposed to losing all grasp over our reality. So to avoid that dark path, that dark road, we reassess thinking and regain hope. And then we practice self-compassion. So to combat those feelings of loneliness and to learn to be happy alone, we like you said, practice things like meditation, mindful walks, physical activity, brain exercises, Sudoku, like you suggested, journaling our thoughts and feelings. Journaling is an exceptional way mm-hmm. of holding on to our memories, because not only do we write them and exercise that memory to recall and record, but later we have a written testament to things that we've done in our lives that help keep our memory at its peak. And reaching out to old friends. So
right.
when you find yourself without friends, like you said, go out, we find a way to get out into a store or somewhere mm-hmm. where there are other people and navigate.
Right.
Any suggestions on how to break that ice? You seem to be an outgoing.
Well, just take the first step. Take the first step. Plan it. Maybe execute. Maybe don't go too far. So that's it. Just take the first step. The first step is already very hard. So just take the first step.
It's funny you should say step, because the next one says, it's like mm-hmm. invite a friend on a walk. There are a few things like walking and talking. Consider inviting a friend or a neighbor to walk with you for every few days. Exercising can increase endorphins and improve your mood and outlook. And doing it in good company can help you foster a sense of well-being that could help you overcome the feeling of loneliness. And you can also walk the extra by following some of these ideas, like switch your routes and scenery every day you go out to walk. Pick different times of the day you can enjoy sunrises and sunsets and mid-afternoons if possible. Consider a drive to a park, forest or preserve or the mall, and walk in a new environment. Be mindful of what's going on around you, focusing on things like people, sounds, mm-hmm. and physical sensations. So consider setting a different goal for each day, and these can include
mm-hmm.
the duration of the walk, pace, rhythm, conversation topics. For example, you could have a day where you only exchange jokes. On another day, we could be a very quiet day or a vent day. We just vent. But we find some way to get out and reintegrate ourselves with other human beings. It seems that human contact is essential. Do you think?
I think there are different ways to go about it, and you just have to kind of trial and error how you get to your goal. Set goals and make little mini steps towards it. And if that is just go to the door and look outside, if you're afraid of going out, if it's make a few phone calls every week, then do what you have to do and employ all of the – try all the tactics and little steps and tricks and tips do it all. You don't know what's going to work.
That's
where
it.
I am.
Exactly. And that's what it is.
I said, that's where I am. That's just my opinion.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it's a matter of trial and error. That's kind of what it's like since day one with severe critical brain trauma. You trial and error. You try one way. If it doesn't work, you try it another way until you find something that works.
Or something else. Or try something else. So it may not be just diet and exercise. It may be meditation, reading, brain training, and medicine. So there may be some other combination that works for you. However, if you don't take the first step, you won't know.
And that's what it's all about, taking that first step, because at some point we realize we don't have any more time. Time does eventually end. So we do the most we can, the best we can, for as long as we can, and with gratitude, because I think gratitude makes us a lot more grounded, because we're not lost
and
in what we want.
And receptive to the treatment. Also
receptive
to what the therapy.
Oh, yeah.
There's something believing that it's going to work.
It's like a mindset. You program yourself to a certain degree of what your outcome can be and what it will be. So I really hope that Cameron is listening tonight. I hope you're either listening live or hear the archived show, because her letter to the network here, Surviving Head Trauma, was quite touching, and she seemed as if she needed to have this conversation tonight. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people who are new to this world, and even not just new, even people who've been in it for decades probably fall down that rabbit hole sometimes and need help getting out. And there's nothing like helping other people to help you get out of that hole yourself. That rabbit hole, it can be deep, but helping other people can pull you out of it. I've learned that about myself. I think that whenever I focus on a loved one who's going through something, it takes the focus off of my own personal issues.
Right.
So gratitude, helping others. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of like a circle. We go through our own trauma only to find that our trauma improves by helping others with their traumas.
Right.
At least for Terry Smith, that's what I've found in my 39 years post-trauma experience. Helping others helps yourself mentally, emotionally, and especially when it's someone you love deeply, because that's an eye opener. Makes you more grateful for what you thought was maybe not the best life, but then when you have a loved one go all out mentally with dementia or Alzheimer's or something, you really realize what's important in life, and that's to be able to speak with someone and they know who you are. You've known them your whole life, and when they no longer know who you are, that's loneliness. That's true loneliness. So you focus on the good as much as possible, and those who you love, that I think is a good medicine for virtually any problem or illness.
Yeah, it does sound good. However, I warn you, everyone's different, and there may be a side effect or two. So if you're willing to do that, then yes.
The side effect of the despair of losing the person, you mean, maybe?
Well, like effects of, the person being gone, the loss, the person not knowing or not being able to do what they were able to do. So there are different aspects to the mental decline and of the patient, of the person. So how you address that could be important, but it can be difficult. I don't know. I haven't been in that type of situation. And even though that's not like a traumatic brain injury, it's a traumatic situation.
Yes. Really. And you know, what's funny is that like before we started this months ago dealing with this topic, you hear and see the commercials on TV, you read about it and you see it in the newspaper or whatever, but there's no comparison to actually knowing someone with it completely, because it just doesn't touch you the same way. Like brain trauma, people hear about brain trauma. They think they use, oh yeah, you bumped your head, you hit your head. Okay. They don't quite understand unless they're in that situation. So you take it a lot more seriously when it happens to you. But that's what this network is all about. We're here because we've all been through something traumatic in our lives. And most people have, whether it's brain injury or dementia or Alzheimer's, or we've all been through things that have changed our lives. So ultimately, right. I think we to find peace in the end, and not even at the end, but right now, to reach out and find some peace in this world. So with that in mind, Michelle, we have 7 minutes left.
Seven? Oh, wow.
7 minutes.
I've just gone really fast.
2 hours. We haven't looked at the switchboard. I
was lighting up earlier.
I'm telling you, we have a long list here. No hands are up, though, so we're good. No one's raising their hand. If you had your hand up, I apologize. I've not had this key switchboard up. I've been looking at different things I had prepared for our conversation tonight instead of keeping my eyes on the switchboard where I should, but after a while it gets complicated to switch between tabs.
Yeah.
Focus on this conversation. That in and of itself is an accomplishment for many survivors. You will identify how what something sounds so simple can be complicated with the brain trauma. Remembering to switch tabs, knowing that you're alive on air, going back to those little things, or is that just a brain burp for everybody? Everybody has that moment.
I
think it's
more frequent,
more frequent for brain trauma survivors, I know.
Right. But the numbers are growing every day, so surviving brain trauma is real. It's a real thing.
It is real. It is real, Michelle. I do think we have time for maybe one more word from Brain Injury Association of America. We will let them have 33 more seconds, 33 seconds for Brain Injury of America.
Imagine not knowing the difference between a hairbrush, a toothbrush, or a paintbrush, or forgetting which goes on first, your shoes or your socks. More than 2.5 million children and adults sustain traumatic brain injuries in the United States each year. If you or someone close to you has experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. Get the help you need today. Call the Brain Injury Association at 1-800-444-6443 or on the web at biausa.org.
BIAUSA.org. They've been helpful in many, many ways for our community, our brain injury community. So, Michelle, if you don't have anything to add to overcoming loneliness for our dear listeners, especially Cameron, we won't give her last name, but Cameron, if you're out there, We really wish you the best, and thank you for sharing with us what you're going through, and we hope we've helped somehow tonight. And not only you, but any other listener out there with the same ideas or thoughts about loneliness or where it might lead, we hope that we've been helpful in giving you some direction, letting you know, for one thing, you're not alone. You may feel lonely, you're definitely not alone. We are here with you, for you, and do everything we can to help you on Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening and joining us each month. And we will continue to take your letters. You can write to us on Facebook on the Surviving Head Trauma page. So go to Facebook, Surviving Head Trauma, and write us a note, write us a letter, or catch us live each month, fourth Thursday, 10 p.m. until midnight. We're live, or you can call the show and speak if you'd like by pressing 1 on your keypad. So with that, we'd like to wish you the best until next month, because we're getting close to the end of the summer, close to football season.
Right. And the end of our show also.
The end of our show, yes. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for joining us this evening. And we wish you the best, and may you get better. Just get better. And it will get better, no matter which stage or how far along you are post-trauma. It doesn't go away. You just get stronger, and you find ways to deal with it better.
And right, to cope.
Learning, coping mechanisms. You develop them over time, and you'll get to the point where you can walk out, and no one will have a clue that you have brain trauma. Because you've learned to mask the things that need masking, or you become confident enough to share with people what is going on in your brain, and they will be more understanding than you can imagine. And you can write notes immediately upon them telling you something, because they understand that if you don't write it at that moment, you will forget it. So be comfortable going out, meeting other people, being with other people, because loneliness can kill. Loneliness leads to dangerous self-medicated habits. We don't want that. We want you to be able to achieve the highest level of the new you possible. So with that, we wish you love, whether it's morning, afternoon, or evening when you're listening to this show. We wish you love and send our best wishes to your recovery, to your growth, and to your loved ones, if you're a caregiver, and to you for being a strong person. Caregiving itself is an experience. We won't call it traumatic, but it can be certainly earth moving.
Right. And challenging.
Challenging, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Michelle, any last
words?
Yes,
I'm here. Did you make it to the end?
We were at the end.
No, keep going.
Less than a,
never give up. Never quit.
Never quit. And Bill, if you're out there listening to us, we'd like to thank you for joining us. And we are all sending love to the person we love, and love for all of our audience, all of our listening audience. We know everyone is going through something. But the deal is we get through it together, and together we can make it. You together with me on that, Michelle?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything else to add. I think we've covered everything.
All right. Well, that's it. We're going to say goodnight to you for another month and welcome you back on, was it August? Let me look at the calendar. We have 10 seconds here. In fact, it said just 10 seconds. Oh, no, 10 seconds.
That's the end.
August 24th is our next show. We'll see you then, and good night. Good night, Michelle.
Good night, Terry. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.